As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Copa with Felipe Cardenas. I am your host, and I'm joined once again by my colleague at The Athletic, Pablo Maurer. I'm still in Fort Lauderdale. Pablo is in D.C., but we've spent plenty of time here, as you know, if you've been listening and tracking our multiple reports. We've spoken to several teams out here, FC Cincinnati, D.C. United, and spent a lot of time with Inter Miami over the weekend. Today, we are releasing the audio version of our interview, our Q&A with Phil Neville, head coach of Inter Miami. The written piece came out on Monday. We're recording this on Tuesday, February 21st. We thought it would be great to just allow you all to hear Phil Neville's voice, hear his thoughts about promotion and relegation, his thoughts on the fact that the playoff structure, the new format, wasn't official at the time of the recorded interview. It is now official. Pablo Maurer and Jeff Reuter from The Athletic both broke the story earlier this morning that indeed we will see a best of three first round matchups. We'll have a play-in game for two ninth place teams in each conference. There will be single elimination in the semifinal conference, the conference final, the MLS Cup, direct to penalties if any of those games end in a tie. And yes, Pablo, we are here to talk about Phil Neville first. First of all, how are you? Welcome back to Copa.
I'm good. I'm happy to be back in D.C. Florida's wonderful, but I think like 6 days at the Westin, and I mean, calling it Fort Lauderdale would be generous.
It was lots of U15 soccer teams and volleyball teams.
Yeah. It was interesting. I'm happy to be back. It's been an interesting few days.
Yeah, I would say so. Following our reporting over the weekend, which included the Q&A with Phil Neville, immediately after the Q&A, which when he gave his thoughts is, I thought, just very candid thoughts about the fact that MLS teams had no idea what the playoff structure was. He called the decision by MLS to not inform the clubs of those decisions with just 7 days to go before the first game. He referred to that as being not elite. Those are the things that force or that prevent MLS from being compared to the top leagues in the world. He was very candid about who's making these decisions here. Is it Major League Soccer? Is it Apple? And so following that Q&A, we released a headline off of his comments. And to be frank, Inter Miami, we're not very happy with that report. And the resulting decision by Inter Miami, the fact that we were barred from their media day. They banned us from their media day, which was today, Tuesday the 21st. Pablo and I had traveled to Florida to cover the team, to be part of that media day after our one-on-one interviews. I was informed personally by a club official that I would not be permitted as part of those media day activities because it was not an MLS-sanctioned event. So if I wanted to show up at training tomorrow, I could do that because that is sanctioned by the league. So, yes, we put out a statement. It's just us. We're disappointed by that. Like, we came out here to cover this team. We want to cover more MLS teams. That's the whole point of us traveling to a location to do that. So barring us from doing our jobs and limiting the league's coverage, I think, was a disappointing move, and it was unfortunate. But it is the reality, Pablo. It is what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to get like too granular with this, but I would just sort of go into maybe a little more detail about what happened. I mean, I think the club seemed to take issue with the timing of us releasing sort of a segment of that Q&A on Saturday during one of their games. Obviously, maybe not the best timing for the club, but on the other hand, it's a highly newsworthy quote that obviously is no longer newsworthy once the league officially announces its playoff format, which they did today. I think there was a lot of heightened sensitivity around Phil's comments about promotion and relegation and the playoff comments as well. Obviously, the league and Apple, this is a groundbreaking partnership from them. This is just me speculating at this point. I can imagine maybe there were people at the league who had concerns about Phil saying that. And, you know, when it comes to Pro Rel, look, man, I don't think anybody out there thinks that that's about to happen in MLS. But, you know, if you're the head coach of a team and you you say or insinuate that that it would be a good idea. Again, I don't know if this is what it, you know, that specifically this is what happened, but there are plenty of owners in MLS who would seem to think, you know, why is he even talking about this, right?
Sure.
When in reality,
sure.
I mean, this is just, I think, Felipe, now just like my personal point of view, the thing that almost makes this most ridiculous is that it's a great interview, and that there's, you know, I just literally looking at my Twitter mentions, and Kyle McCarthy, buddy of mine, obviously who covers soccer in New England, his takeaway from that was, quote, this is a man who sounds like he cares about MLS, right? And that was my takeaway too, is he's invested, he was engaging, had a lot to say about, I mean, not just Pro Rel in the playoffs, about Inter, about Joseph Martinez, about the EPL, about X, Y, and Z thing. I mean, honestly, man, I think the two of us left and
We were impressed by Phil Neville. He was a great interview. He was excellent. I agree. I walked away. That's a great point. Like, he truly cares. Like, and let's not forget, Inter Miami, David Beckham, Phil Neville, they've taken a lot of heat because of that relationship between Phil Neville and David Beckham. Like, is he even, you know, qualified for the job? Should he be the coach of a team when his best friend's the owner? And we were very clear. Like, he has done very well amidst all the turmoil of the team, because that's literally been Inter Miami since they launched, just turmoil. And this guy has continued to coach, he's continued to care, the players speak highly of him. And to your point, I thought that interview was very refreshing, because it's somebody that is fully invested, that has a lot of pressure on him anyway to be at this club and to be successful in this year four of their existence. It was a great opportunity, and one that I think Phil Neville was anxious to have, to really be able to speak openly about how he views the league and the things that he really likes about the league. He called the league brave. He said it was one of the hardest leagues to play in, one of the hardest leagues to coach in. And it's not because it's at the equal of the Premier League or it's Serie A level football. No, it's just that it has all these idiosyncrasies, all these unique sort of traits and the changes that force you to be on your toes all the time.
Like, we talked to him extensively. I was impressed with his, what seems like a relatively deep knowledge of kind of the tactical evolution of the league, the way other teams play, their key players, that sort of stuff. And I get it. He's Neville's head coach. He should be familiar with those things. But we've all talked to coaches across the league, and they've felt less energetic, less invested, less attentive, right? So I would just encourage you, the listener, to give the interview a listen. Judge for yourself. I don't even think that Phil Neville says anything controversial in this interview. I mean, that's again what makes me laugh the hardest, is it's just a dude kind of staying the obvious when it comes to the things that raise sensitivities. But I don't know. I still enjoyed the interview, even despite the ensuing backlash. And in regards to us being banned, man, it's just disappointing, Felipe, because The Athletic, really probably more than any other outlet at this point, is investing time and money and resources to send reporters. I mean, you know, nobody batted an eyelash at sending us to South Florida for 8-9 days to do stories on 4 or 5 teams. And it can be frustrating, obviously, when teams don't necessarily want to be covered, you know?
Yeah,
so that's just my take.
That doesn't help. I agree. That doesn't help anybody when you limit
access, and you know there are rules around MLS that prohibit teams from limiting access. They found a loophole today, Inter Miami, and that's what they did. But it shines a light, the wrong light on MLS. I think you're looking at a team that, like every other team in MLS, needs more coverage. And we were happy to be down there. I think I came away from South Florida talking to different coaches, Pat Noonan, Jim Curtin, Phil Neville, and thinking, all right, let's go. Like, these guys are, they're ready for the season, and they're ready for the changes that are being thrown at them last minute, too. It was great to see these professionals discussing it openly, because I felt like they trusted us as an outlet. And we will continue to report the way we report. We will continue to cover the league, the teams, the players, in the best way that we possibly can. And so, yeah, with that being said, let's leave it at that. This is our interview with Phil Neville. This is our Q&A. Enjoy. So, yeah, I think there's several topics we want to cover. Okay. Big picture stuff, culture, leadership, tactics, MLS.
Okay.
So let's just start with a basic question. What have you seen so far in preseason? Like, what do you like from this preseason that may be different from previous years, and what's the outlook for this team year four?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that I've liked is that you look at the last two preseasons, been really traumatic the last two preseasons. I say traumatic the first one because I came in and everything was new. The second preseason was turnaround of 19 players. We totally ripped up the roster and rebuilt. So that was a preseason where it felt new again. This season just feels right, if you know what I mean, because there's consistency, there's continuity. That there is people at this football club that's been here now for maybe 12 to 18 months that know how I work, I know how they work. Players are going into their second seasons. The nucleus of the spine is going into their second season with me. So on the first day of pre-season, yes, we wanted to drop 3 to 4 new players into the roster. But when we had our initial meeting on day one, it felt like my boys were coming back from this previous season. So I'd say that this pre-season feels right in terms of how you would want to go into a pre-season. Stability, continuity, consistency in messages, behaviours, and people that you work with. Yes, I think in any season, what I've learned over my career is that freshening up in key positions, both as a staff and as players, is vital. Keeps people on the toes, keeps the challenge high, keeps the competition high. And a new voice and a new method here and there is really important. So it just feels right. I think what I've seen on the pitch, I've been really frustrated this week a little bit, is because I feel as if we're close, but when we're not where we want to be. I still think there's some more gelling. I still think we need to get players at different levels of fitness up to where they need to be. I think the demands now are, as we're getting close to the season, the demands, the expectation, the intensity has risen, and I think the players are under no illusions about what I expect.
What do you think the club is at, in your eyes, from sort of a culture building perspective? Obviously, it's still a relatively new project, and there are things to iron out, relationships with players, people, that sort of stuff. What do you make of the culture here heading into the season?
I think the biggest thing about last year, forget results on the pitch, was the culture. We built a culture in here that now needs to stay. The foundations of what happens down there and what happens up here is now fundamentally what this club should be like. When I got the job, the Mas brothers and David talked about the Manchester United culture, and the Mas brothers talked about the Miami Heat culture of hard work and intensity and ruthlessness and relentlessness, which is similar to what the Man United philosophy was all about. So there was great synergies there. And in the first season I was here, we didn't have any of that. We didn't have any of that. There was fractions, there was individuals, really good people. I'm saying this, it wasn't bad atmosphere, it was just the recipe for the cake wasn't right there, the ingredients weren't right there. And last year what we focused on when we recruited, because recruitment is the biggest thing, was character, personality and the person. And I felt we got that absolutely spot on. And what we tried to do this pre-season is build on top of that with quality. We've got the character, we've got the person, we've got the ingredients. we've recruited along those lines again, but what I've asked for and what Chris has tried to deliver is quality now. Can we get more quality in there to take us above six, you know, into the playoff game? The biggest learning from last year was I felt throughout the season we were competing really well with everyone. The playoffs had a different feel. It was, you know, that saying, you sort the men out from the boys, and it felt like the playoff, the atmosphere, the tension in the game felt like a real big game where you need big players, you need players to be able to handle that. So after that game, I said, look, guys, we now know what it feels like to get to the playoffs, but more importantly, you now know what it like. You now know the feeling of what it takes to perform in a playoff. That's what we try to recruit, the players that can play in the playoffs and can be the difference in the playoffs.
I mean, imagine Joseph fits that mold, obviously. Yeah. He's an all-time great striker in the league. Yeah. How do you see him fitting into the group so far? How's it been in pre-season?
I've got to say he was my number one target, my personal number one target. Yeah. And I say that because I knew he was losing Gonzalo. And I went to see the owners in November, December, just before Christmas, it probably was, in the World Cup period. And we were talking about the roster and you know, they love to get involved in everything. And I said, what about Josef Martínez? Because I knew everything wasn't right at Atlanta. And, you know, when you play against, or you see people on television and you read about people, you think, oh, they're good players. But when you see them at pitch level, you just get a different feel from what you probably guys... Sure. See up there, you know, it's the speed, the intensity, the movements when you know, off the ball. And he scored against us two or three times. Yeah. And
Sometimes out of nothing.
Yeah, and we played in Atlanta two seasons ago. And we were on a road trip. We were going Atlanta, Portland, I think it was. Yeah. And I remember after the game, I think he'd scored the second goal. We played really well in the game. He'd scored the second goal. The ball broke. He spun in behind Kevin Leardon when he scored. And after the game... as you walk in under the tunnel at the Mercedes Arena, is it called? Mercedes-Benz Arena. I was walking out and Josef Martínez was there, and he was talking to Leandro Pérez, obviously, with teammates. And he came over to me and he said, "Hi, sir, how are you doing?" And he called me sir, and his face lit up and we spoke and we obviously had a little bit of joking about the goal and stuff. But from that moment on, it had a big impact on me in terms of respectful, quality. I just thought he was a class act, and then obviously when we started to talk to him, he was my personal number one target because I thought he's highly motivated. He wants to break the MLS goal scoring record. So we're getting a player that's incredibly highly motivated. That's been questioned. That's been sort of like people think is he still the same player? Can he still play the same goals? Is he fit enough to play? You know. So we're getting a player on a bounce, and we've invested heavily in that part of the pitch.
What about the fact that, and this is sort of a larger question, he is also a really big personality in the league.
Yeah.
Highly competitive. I've covered it for 5 years. I've spoken to his teammates. I've seen him in training, seen him in games. And so the big name, like the player management of the big names, like you had Gonzalo, you've told us the stories of going through that. What is your philosophy in terms of managing those types of players? And in general, just man management.
Yeah, well, I think they're human beings, you know. Big personality, big egos, what else? Best players in the world, they want this, they want that, you know. And when people within the football club were saying about Josef, I said, I want Josef. Oh, he's bad in the locker room. He doesn't train very hard. He'll challenge every decision you make. But was one thing that kept sticking in my mind, he's a winner. And every time I spoke to someone outside of this football club, and I rung people that I knew, and they kept saying, if things aren't bad, he'll challenge it. If you don't win, if he doesn't win a five-a-side, he'd be angry. And I kept saying, is that bad or is that good?
Yeah.
You know, like, I want 22 more of them players.
Yeah.
And then you just go back to, he's a human being. And they have the same parts as everybody else. And and basically, you've got to treat them, challenge them, give them love, tell them when they're not doing well, and show them respect. You know, my first job in coaching was at Manchester United, and I never forget the moment. Probably the biggest learning curve I had as a coach was that you go into a job and you think, and then all of a sudden David Moyes said, right, you're gonna take a little bit of the passenger at the start of the warm up, and literally as the guys were going on a jog, they were coming round, at the front there was Giggs, Vidic, Evra, Rooney, Van Persie all coming towards me, and I was like, you know, I was like, it's shit or bust. It's like, because if you don't deliver, they'll eat you alive. If you deliver, they'll give them respect. And what I decided there was is that just to go for it, is that to treat them normal, to challenge them, to test them, to make sure that you keep trying to improve them. And that's all they want. Joseph is no different than Gonzalo. Gonzalo's no different than Chris McVay. Is that whether they're big name there or the supplementary roster, for me, fundamentally, yes, you let them get away with one or two things because they've earned the right for that. But there's times when you've just got to treat them as human beings. And I think with Joseph, from the very first time we spoke to him, I think we had a really good connection. Why? Because I think I spoke to him on a level that made him feel as if, you know, he's going to respect me, but he's going to work me hard, he's going to challenge me, and we spoke the same language, you know.
What do you make of the sort of tactical evolution of the league? I've covered MLS for 12, 13 years, and it seems like for years there was this migration away from maybe the traditional American style kick and run, you know, that mentality to something more possession based, and now it seems like different teams in the league obviously play different ways. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's even a regression back towards that more physical style. What do you see in MLS? Is it challenging to coach here?
I'd say there's great diversity within the league in terms of cultures, nationalities, players, which means that there are different styles in every club. I think it's one of the hardest leagues in the world to play into coaching and to win. I've got to say that because the diversity of the whole league. It was funny because I was talking to Jason and Javier Morales, and we were talking about teams that play three at the back system, and Javi was a MLS All-Star number 10, sure. Jason was an MLS All-Star and a coach. And you say about a system that we want to play at this moment in time, what was it like when you played in that system? I said, well, you know what, when we was playing, we didn't play against three at the back. Everyone played 4-4-2. And you see, well, that's an evolution of the league, is that now, you know, there's probably teams that play three at the back and four at the back at the same time. You know, we're playing Austin today, who with possession they have three, without possession they play four. So straight away you're thinking, well, the league's getting better tactically. Technically and tactically, the league's getting better. The type of player that can adapt to those types of situations within a game means that we're getting a tactically better manager. Why is that? Because I've been at home today. I've watched four games already on Peacock or USA Today.
Sure.
You know that the visibility of soccer is far greater. I went for a run this morning. I went past a park pitch, and there's football and soccer played everywhere. And this happened in England. This happened in England when more channels and more TV and there was more exposure. Players became tacticians and managers themselves. Because why? Because they are learning about soccer and football along the way. So I'd say that the diversity is not just the nationality we have in the league, but the diversity for me is the different styles and systems within the league now. We've got Montreal first game that play a certain style. We've then got Philadelphia the week after that have a real fundamental style. They've got a real identity. Yeah. The week after that we play NYC who have a clear identity. But all three are different.
Yeah.
One plays a three, one plays a diamond, and one plays 4-2-3-1, you know what I mean? So you're thinking about, and that is probably what you see in European football, where you've got to have tactically adaptable players. And that's the biggest thing for us as coaches now is the teaching, the learning of the players to become just as adaptable.
What do you make of, it's interesting you mentioning obviously watching games on Peacock, this is another thing. We were sort of talking about this last night. You know, if you speak to voices from the UK that have coached in the league or played in the league, you get the impression, you know, sort of hear the same things. You know, MLS is evolving, and you know it's a league that's commanding more respect. Really though, if you listen to English voices in the media or in punditry or commentary, there still feels like there's like a little derision sometimes, or like the league is still on a much different tier, which by all accounts it is, obviously. It's not the EPL, but it's...
Do you know what I see the biggest difference is obviously because I watch the English EPL games, is the intensity of the atmospheres within the ground.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's the biggest difference. And if you're talking to someone like someone that's been in this environment and this environment, is that the intensity on the pitch is pretty similar. You know, we talked about tactical, technical. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're growing really fast, but we need to get this type of atmosphere. I love watching Portland. When you go to Portland that type of atmosphere, the playoff final. You think about the playoff game that we had against NYC. there's a smell in the air that's quite normal when you're in Europe. When I walked out in this Soldier Field once, yeah, Soldier Field. Which baseball stadium did we play out? Soldier Field.
Oh yeah, Yankee Stadium.
No, City Field once. City Field.
Yeah.
Is that there's just a smell. The stadium wasn't full, but there's a smell. Yeah. There's a smell. There's a feeling. There's like
it's a full time chill in the area.
There's like you get these little butterflies and you think, oh, we're in a game now. You know, and I think that's the only thing now that the MLS needs to get, the intensity from the supporters of it's almost like tribalism. It's almost like a passion. It's almost like a religion where you turn up to the game and this game is life or death, whether you win or lose. I think we have large sections of our supporters that it is their life, but we need more of our supporters to have that kind of to create the atmospheres that you do create during the season, maybe on one-off occasions, but not every single week in every ground.
More scrutiny too. I mean, from the fans as well, like that they're invested in every draw, every win, every point.
Absolutely,
it's not just a show and entertainment and all that, but.
That's a cultural thing as well. It's basketball. I've been to Mahit, the Dolphins. It's a cultural thing as well.
Sure.
And you know, like the you know, in anyway, carry on.
Okay. You mentioned David, and he's been really open. Anytime we get him in a press conference, he's been very open about his involvement in the club and the building of the club, especially in the player recruitment. How hands-on is he, and how hands-on is too hands-on for as a manager? And you know him really well, so like, is that an issue? But is how do you guys manage that when you have David involved?
Well, I think over the two-year cycle, well, this is my third year now. The two-year cycle and two-year transfer windows we've had in the first window, me, him, and Chris were working hand in hand because we knew we were working together. He wanted to be involved, and then. Then in the second transfer window in the second year, there was a little bit more distance. Why? Because he trusted us.
Right.
And then in this window, it now becomes a case of we need three, four different positions. These are our priorities. And David says, okay, good. Just let me know if you need anything. Let me know if you need any advice. And so there's still that gap there now where is he invested? Yes. But does he trust us? He trusts us probably more now than he did in the first year. I always think with owners that you know, you hear some managers saying, "Oh, owners interfere on." Like, what does interfere look like? I always think that as a case of they're passionate. They own a football club. They spent their money on the stadium, this training ground, the new stadium, on players, and I think they earn the right to have a say, to be involved. And my philosophy and Chris's philosophy is always you have to make them part of the process. You can't just think that as a manager and a sporting director we're just gonna have this pot of money and we're just gonna go. No, you have to get them invested, because when they come on a Saturday they want to see a certain thing, they want to see a certain style, they want to be invested with the players. That's why we invite them for barbecues. We went to their house 10 days ago, all the team, all the players, we went because we're all in it together. They speak a lot, the Mass Brothers, about a family, about a family and a culture, and really that is their strength, because of their, our strength is the football side, our strength is our knowledge about football, so they want to see it all and they want to be invested in it all, and this is their baby. And you know, I have no problems with that. You know, in my first year, you look at the suites next to the bench, David stands up there, and there's many times I just turn around, go back to my seat, and I see him there, and we speak. And I'm like, why would I not speak to a guy that's probably been my best friend, but also been one of the best players in the world at a certain time that knows football? You know, and I'm saying he's not telling me tactics, it's just probably a conversation that two people about football would have. So, you know, I'm fortunate. I am an owner of a football club, and it's funny when you know, there is certain behaviours you want from an owner, you know. And there's times when I've been an owner in the past when I've not been involved into Miami, because obviously I don't get involved in Salford now. Is that probably I've overstepped the line? Probably I've gone to training and shouted on, but it's my club. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, no, we're good.
What do you MLS continues to evolve is the right word, but the recipe changes every single year as far as competitively rules, that sort of stuff. This year there's a lot of chatter about the playoff format being overhauled. Seems like they're going to do best of threes or something like that. There's the Apple TV deal, so they want more games, more inventory. You know, as a coach, what's your perspective on that? And I guess the other obvious question is more games, more inventory. Would you like to see them alter the salary cap or roster regulations to give you more flexibility?
We've asked several coaches.
Well, I think, first and foremost, I think the Apple deal will transform the whole league. I think that's revolutionary. I really do. I think the product, the quality of the product will, that the viewers are seeing, the content will be, I think, will be mega. So I think that is groundbreaking, and I think it shows the growth. Next question was the playoffs. Now, the one thing I would say, and this is not a criticism, but we're 6 days, 7 days out from the first game of the season, and we don't know the playoff format. I think that's poor. I think when you're talking about professionalism and elite, I think when you're 7 days out from the start of the season, and we've had talks this season, and one of the players asked one of the MLS guys the other day, what's the playoff system? And they didn't know. And I'm like, that's not elite. No. You know, if you're talking about sort of like... differences, we talked about the intensity of the fans. Sure. That's a big difference, because that's like, well, what is happening? Are they making it up? Are they not sure? Are they just going to wing it along the way? So for me, that's like, if we want to be the best and we want to be compared to the top leagues, this should have been decided 2 months ago.
For sure.
2 months ago. So that irks me a little bit, is that we're going into a season, and bearing in mind, if you think about basic contracts, are probably based on playoff goals. Home playoff, away playoff. Yeah. Now we might have three in a group.
Sponsorships.
Your season tickets. Your how many games you have in a season. We've planned the whole season.
Yeah.
But we actually don't know when the season ends, and we don't know when how many games we've got after the regular season. So for me, that's 5-7 days out from the start of the season. That is like, for me, that's a cross. That's like, no, we need to be better at that.
It's interesting, as a reporter, you get a different perspective on it, because our colleague Sam and I have been reporting on it all season, and we reported at some point they were going to do a group stage format. You can sort of see them like trying different things and figuring it out. Yeah. So I think it really probably is closer to what you were saying about, like, have they figured it out yet? I think they still sort of like...
Yeah, and my question is, who's figuring it out?
Is it
Apple, or who's wagging the dog here? Who's wagging the dog? So, and then you talk about the roster. I think it's one of the strengths of the league a little bit, in terms of, you know, you can every team's got this equality, but eventually it's going to have to be broken. Eventually the ceiling's got to rise. Eventually we've got to have, you know, for us to really be able to compete. You look at Seattle's just gone to the Club World Championship. For us in this league to go to that World Club Championships and compete and win, we're going to have to raise it. We're going to have to keep challenging the authorities to say, look, we need more investment in the teams. We need more spots. We need, you know, so we can bring more players in. But I actually really like the format of the cap system. I think it keeps everybody pretty equal. I think what it does is it keeps the bottom team from last year, means that, you know, Toronto could easily win the league this year. You can see it. The flip could be really big. And the next thing, I suppose, is promotion relegation. You know, is would that help with the intensity of the league? Would that help with the competition of the league?
I mean, where do you stand on that? Do you think that's something that would ever be feasible in MLS? Maybe an MLS 1,
in
MLS 2 thing?
In American sports, it's...
Because that is just, like, to fans, by and large, it seems like just a non-starter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but...
There are many who would love it, but...
Yeah. You know. I think I'm an advocate that maybe it's another step that the league could take to mean that, you know, like, right to the last game of the season, we've got a real competitive league. The bottom two go down. I see it in my country, in England, is that it's life or death at the bottom, whether you're in the, you know, whichever conferences you go into. So, you know, say about that moving forward, you're going to have to make brave decisions. I think this league has always made brave decisions, and this is not a criticism. This is like, how can we keep moving the league forward? I think some kind of reward or promotion or relegation is not a daft idea to explore. I'm sure they are doing, but I'm all for it, because I think it would help. It would increase the competitiveness in the league.
I wanted to ask you, I think the perception of not just Inter Miami, but the Heat, other teams in the area, is, you know, it seems like this club wants to be kind of a glamour club.
Yeah.
Do you think, here's a question, do you think this club, you know, you mentioned the Union.
Yeah.
They put together a historically great season last year.
Yeah.
And... With basically, you know, names that aren't recognizable to anybody globally.
Low spending as well.
Exactly. Yeah, one of the bottom tier teams spending-wise. Could this team still captivate this market with a roster like that? Or is it always going to be a thing where the team wants to have big names.
It's Miami.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're talking about. Talking about different areas working at St. Louis. I know the sporting director at St. Louis, Lou Fanfensteel, and you're talking about an area where the club is at. The team has got to represent that area.
Sure.
And I think in Miami, I don't think they would accept or want just average. This club shouldn't accept just average. We should be aiming for bigger than that. And you know, I learned an incredible lesson is that I go and watch the Heat all the time because I'm obsessed with the coaching.
Sure.
Our club surgeon is the surgeon at the Heat, and I keep going there, and it was good. And then LA Lakers came to town and LeBron came on court, and it was like, and the whole stadium was full, and there was different. I went, this town wants to be excited. This town wants to be turned on. You know what I mean? Barcelona came here, sold out within a day.
Yeah.
So that tells you that this area, it doesn't want mediocrity. It doesn't want average. It's and that's no disrespect to any other area. Is that Miami? We have to do things different.
Sure.
You know, our kit is different. But if we just had a grey kit, I don't think it would be Miami. We have to be different, and we have to be brave enough to be different. You know what I mean? So I think that is part of the challenge from within, is that you wanna create that working class type culture, but this club is probably far from working class. It's got to be, have a little bit of glitz and glam. It's got to aim for the moon rather than a star. So that comes with the location that we're in, because the people of Miami want to be turned up. They want South Beach. They want the.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
So yesterday, we were out for dinner, and we heard an Argentine accent. And we ran into a table of five Argentines, two that live in Miami, three that were visiting from Buenos Aires. All five of them were eating the messy burger.
In which restaurant?
Hard Rock Casino. They have this messy, it's chorizo and some.
He's staying at the Hard Rock?
No, but we went and tried the burger because we're serious journalists, right?
Just almost as a gag, and then we started looking around. Everybody's eating it, and then we see this table of five Argentines, one of whom had gone to the World Cup final in Qatar, and
we just started talking to him, and they're like, "This is the only place he can come and play. There's no other place for him. It's here." How does this club manage that now serious outlets like The Athletic, L'Équipe in France are like, Inter Miami, pole position?
Yeah.
What does that do for the club, and how important is that signing if it happens? Does it feel like everything is riding on the possibility of a world-class player like Messi coming here?
Well, I think it goes bigger than Inter Miami. I think it's an MLS. Yeah. I think it's big for the MLS. I think.
And is this a Beckham and Pelé with the Cosmos, like that level of a signing for soccer in the country, do you think?
I think this would be the biggest probably signing ever in American sports. Mm. You know, and from an outsider probably coming in, I can't think of another star of that magnitude to come from a major footballing country to this place, and I did feel David did change the world of soccer in America, and this I think is probably similar, but maybe even bigger. You know what I mean? Because you're talking about one of the greatest footballers of all time, and when we talked before about Miami, we have to be in for players like that.
Yeah.
You know, when Cristiano was 50-50. We have to be linked with those types of players because I think that's what the people demand. You know, when they come to the Drive Pink, they want the best players here. The owners have said from day one that we're not just going to do things average. We're going to go for the best, and we get calls off the best players in the world. One, that they want to come to the MLS, but two, they want to play and live in Miami.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? And when you are attracting players and scouting players, we've got an advantage probably on 80-90% of the MLS. Yeah, LA is beautiful and you have these glamour places, but Miami is a big pull. That's our biggest selling point. When they land at Fort Lauderdale or Miami International, there's places you can take them that will probably guarantee that them and their family will want to come to Miami, whether they've got a wife or family or whether they've got kids or single. So that's our biggest selling point, is that we can probably attract anyone in the world because of our location. We should use that to our advantage. And you know, I think if we have the opportunity to sign Messi, and if he does come to this football club, and I don't think we can hide away from the fact that we are probably in the ballpark, that we're probably in the hunt, is that we've got to be prepared for that, because life will change. Life will change.
Yeah, yeah.
Things will be different, you know, and you're saying about, like, this might not be able to happen, you know, the trees might have to be bigger and the security might have to be tighter. And
I feel like you'd have to play a different stadium.
You know, you think about the walk that the players have today over to that stadium might have to be different. Do you know what I mean? So the travel might have to be different. The hotels we stay in have to be different. But really, that's what we're probably all aspiring to be like anyway. You know what I mean? So it's exciting. But I think it'd be a massive challenge.
I think we wanted to ask you also about your social media. Your approach to social media is interesting. I mean, most coaches in the league, at least, they'll say they don't have a Twitter. Most of them do. You are very, very open. You interact with fans regularly, supporters, whatever. What's the genesis of that? Has it ever caused you any issues? Does the club, does David, people like that, do they have any issues with it? It really is. I know it might not seem alien to you.
Yeah.
But in the world of MLS, I mean, I can't even name another coach that's even on Twitter.
And things are changing. I mean, Luis Enrique was doing Twitch shows during the World Cup.
Yeah.
But we saw your tweet today wishing your brother a happy birthday. It's like, there's comedy there. There's humor. You're very candid. I wrote it down, like, let's talk about his candor. But social media especially, it's interesting how you approach it.
It's the world we live in.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in. And He gets notifications every time I get sent someone out, and if something happens, he'll always send me something. Don't tweet about this. No, but I think when you're talking about the connection that you need to have, connection with our supporters, and to show that our supporters what you are like, how you're feeling, your personality is really important, because you know, you only fall in love with something or someone if you know a little bit more about them, like the personality, and I think it's really important. And what I try to be on social media is really consistent. It's not just when we win or when we lose. I try to be really consistent with the things that and I enjoy it. I think it's, you know, you can say I shouldn't be on it. Why shouldn't I be on it? It's no different than doing the press conference on a Friday. On a Friday, at least I can tweet my words, and people can, you know, people know that I go for a run or a walk, or I walk to work at 5 a.m. You know, that's interesting.
You also don't stay away from, like, I mean, not controversy, but you're open, like, you were defending Gareth Southgate. You know, that was like that's a social media pit.
Yeah, but I think that's important.
Yeah.
I have a platform where I can stick up for a friend and a fellow manager.
Yeah.
I think I stuck up for the another manager
Spanish
women's coach. Yeah. Is you know, because I think it's important. It's a difficult job we have, and you know, you think, so, well, football managers shouldn't be on social media. Well. It's no different than an electrician being on social media. We have a job to do. You know, social media is part of our lives. I prefer Instagram than Twitter, I've got to say. the comments I get being an MLS manager are far more relaxed than being a Lioness manager or a Valencia manager,
sure,
because because there's that tribalism, which which means that probably if I went to another part of the world, and you know, maybe I'd probably look at it and think, well, maybe it's not the right thing to do. Yeah. But I feel as if it's part of who I want to be authentic. And you know, I always think that now you see Luis Enrique, I thought I loved listening to his live tweets during the World Cup. And what was wrong with that? You know, people say, oh, Spain didn't qualify, it was because of that. No, it was nothing to do with that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Pep Instagrams every week. Pochettino's all over Instagram now with his dog. And I'm thinking, well, that's good, because he's one of my, he's a mentor, he's someone I look up to. And, you know, so.
Are you also Fizzer18 on Instagram or no? Or are you Phil Neville?
Philip Neville 18, I think, on Instagram. Yeah.
What's Fizzer? Fizzer is like the
Fizzer is just, I was playing for England, and we had this coach driver, and do you know, like Cockney accent, like a London accent, yep, you know, yep. And they say things in a different way. And my brother got on the bus, and he went, "Oi, girl," and then I got on the bus, and he went, "Oi, Fizz," and then Paul Scholes went, "Fuck." Fizz. So then I was always Fizzer. And then I went back to Man United, and I made a pass. It was a really good pass, and I went, "Great pass, Fizzer." And Roy Keane went, "Fizzer." And then all of a sudden it just catched on. And
it's weird how something one bus driver said, like, it's become Fizz, this entire nickname.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it stuck with me. So actually the guys here don't know me as Fizzer, you know what I mean? So
what do you make of the job Wayne's doing in DC? He has a really challenging project.
Yeah.
You know, different, you know, ownership is willing to invest in a different way than they are here at Les, you know. Obviously, you know, he has some
I like the recruitment he's done in the summer. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably at the stage we were 12 months ago,
sure,
where he's recruited solid, good characters, solid players, and I think they'll have a better season this year without a shadow of a doubt. Like I say, they finished bottom, they could easily be a playoff team this year. He knows the league, you know, when he came back, he played in the league, so he knows a lot about the league. So, and he's serious about being a manager. I think that's the most important thing. You can see, you see some managers that finish their career and they almost bluff their way into a job and then get found out.
Yeah.
I think Wayne's pretty serious, because you see the pathways that he's taking is not necessarily the easiest pathways. You know, he's Derby, they had no money, they're in administration, stayed there, dug it out, funded some of the players' wages, paid for some of the staff. That's the sort of, like, in England we say the apprenticeship of manager. You've got to do the crappy jobs first. And he's probably turned down big jobs, but I think he wants to think about the long game. You know, he's 40, is he now? He's not even 40, probably.
39.
You know, he's wanting to probably be a manager for 20 years, and he knows that it's a long game. And you know, it's a brilliant club to be a manager and a brilliant city to be living. You know?
One more Texas question: two strikers, Joseph and Leo. Is that, do you like playing with two strikers? We're talking to Jim Curtin. He's like, there aren't a lot of teams in MLS that play with two strikers.
Yeah.
How is that going in preseason? And where is Joseph, honestly? Is he ready to be the focal point of this attack?
Well, we got to a point last season with eight games to go where we needed to probably win 6 out of 8 or 5 out of 8 or 5 out of 8 plus a draw. And we had to go for it. And so we did a training session, and we did a scenario-based training session where one team was 1-0 down, one team was 1-0 up, and one team had to defend and one team had to attack. And we went to two strikers and just went gung-ho. And we came off, we said, we really like that. Because it freed up Gonzalo, and Gonzalo and Leo up front looked, ooh, Pozuelo behind, and all of a sudden it just looked like we could, and so we went with it. We were 1-1 against Columbus, and we then made the change with about 8-9 minutes to go plus stoppage time. We scored the goal. We then came back, we played we then went Columbus, we then went DC, we then went Toronto, we then went Orlando, and before the DC game I called a meeting with the senior players. There's five captains in there, or four captains plus another senior player. And my mind was set on playing three at the back against DC. But I kept thinking about the two strikers. So I put up two systems on a board. And what I'd learned with the women's team, the Lionesses, is that you've got to make them part of the process. You've got to make them part of the process. So I was selling this three. I was selling this three at the back. And they just kept looking at this four. They just kept looking at this 4-4-2. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, I looked at Jason and I said, "You fuckers aren't even looking at this, are you?" They went, "No." I went, "This one?" They went, "Yeah." I went, "Right, out the room." We went the next day and we just went for it because they knew this was like attack, attack, attack. This one was attack, but all they could see was the two strikers. Sure. So I thought, right. And it's going to sound bad, but if you think about the makeup of a roster in the MLS, probably the biggest investments are in the top half of the field. The weakest investments are in the bottom half of the field. So we thought, well, okay, let's if we play two strikers, we're playing two more strikers against probably their weakest or low level of player. So
it troubles the back line, two strikers. It really
does. Because teams are used to playing against one or one and a one, and when you play against two strikers, centre backs nowadays don't know how to cope with it because they've never had to do it. Me and Jim probably grew up against 4-4-2 teams, two strikers, took a full back in. Then you went to 4-3-3. Then you have all these wonderful systems that everyone's playing. But centre back now probably doesn't need to tackle, doesn't need to head a ball because everything's ticky tacky in front. Now when you play against Philadelphia, you know you've got to wear an helmet because they're running. You know, Carranza and Oure and whoever's playing up front for them, you're under pressure for 90 minutes of the game, whether you've got the ball or not. You're under pressure.
We have a question here on Everton and Man U. Two different, totally different situations. Everton trying to avoid perhaps a collapse. Proud club, you're very aware of it. Man U up for sale. Different bidders. Qataris are in. What do you make of those contrasts of the two clubs that you know so well in England?
Well, I feel as if Man United are getting themselves on track on the pitch.
Yeah.
I feel as if you can see there's an identity forming, and he's had to make some big decisions and he's made them very well. So I think the identity on the pitch has took a lot of the pressure away from the selling of the club off the pitch. So now, but now what you see in probably Manchester United is that the ground needs redeveloping, the training ground needs redeveloping, the infrastructure of the club needs major investment.
Yes.
So that's and the team needs investment. So it's a big piece of work there for someone. At Everton, and you know that's one of my favourite clubs. Everton is.
If I could follow up on that, Rob, what do you make of the potential owners being, say, for Qatar, you know, abroad? Obviously, it's very modern football, but it's also Manchester United. You know, I mean, it's such a traditionally English global brand.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and I think when you have, it's no different when the Glazers took over. Fundamentally, you need to keep you have to keep what's great about Manchester United.
Sure.
Manchester United's history is the most important thing to that football club. If you ignore that history, you'll not have success, as has been proven in the last 10, 15 years, is that if you go away from the history of what makes that club tick, young players, young development players, style of football, type of player, profile of player, you know, it's never been a club that's really gone for the Galactico. It's never, the football's always been the most important thing. Now what I think Manchester United have, they have football at the forefront of everybody's mind.
Yep.
Football, if it works on the pitch, we'll sell more tickets. Not sell more tickets to then work on the pitch. Because the balance was all wrong. You know what I mean? So we're at Everton. I think what Everton need to do, and I think they've done it now with Sean Dyche, you know, you talk about Miami and Philadelphia. Everton is probably Philadelphia. It's a working class area that demands certain things of that football club, and you need to have the right manager in charge to bring those things, and the right players in charge, the right ownership in charge, the right CEO in charge. And I played at that football club, and we had a clear identity under David Moyes. That was the Everton identity, and it was the same identity that was there when Howard Kendall was there. Certain style of football. So it's a unique club. You know, Leeds is similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think what happens in clubs is that when you go away from your identity and culture, you end up failing.
Yeah.
You end up failing. You know, you're going left and right, and Rafa Benitez, then to Frank, then to this. You're going away from actually, what is it? What is this club all about? And what happens with foreign investment is that because they're not from the area, they don't understand what's needed. Mm-hmm. culturally.
Sure, of course.
And the culture is the most important thing. I speak to Jorge and Jose about it, and Harlem Selesnik, the Miami Heat, is that Miami Heat have the same staff working for them for the last 35 years. I went and sat next to Harlem at a game 2 weeks ago, and he's been at that Heat for 35 years. Every supporter that went past said hello to Harlem. Honestly, Harlem could walk around the whole stadium without a pass because everybody knew, and it was the same for everyone. Yeah. Consistency, stability. That's what football clubs need. And, Jorge and Jose employ 28,000 people, and they know every single person that works for them because they've been working for them for 28 years. What happens is that you come in, you see that Chelsea at the moment come in, rip everyone out, rip it all up. And what happens is you lose at home to Southampton, and the manager's probably going to be under pressure when it's impossible to win. It's literally impossible to win under those circumstances. Yeah. Now, they've given him a 5-year contract. They want stability. Now, with stability means you need to give him then time to bed in. So, going back to your question is that I think the most important thing is that whichever area that you're in, or whoever buys a football club, you've got to have the culture of the club, you've got to have the heart of the club, you've got to think about the history of the club, and you've got to pick the manager and the players to fit that team. And I think what's happened at Everton, there's been a lot of big thinking, ambitious thinking, but that doesn't get you success. That you got to get the right people on the bus. And I think what's happening at Man United at the moment is that both clubs have got the right people in charge that eventually will bring success.